Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. Today, I have a fun interview with Cassandra Clare. Before we get to today's interview, I want to share a bit about today's sponsor. This episode of the What You Next podcast is sponsored by Love at First by Kate Claiborne. Here's a bit about the book. A sparkling, tender novel from the acclaimed author Love Lettering, full of bickering neighbors, surprise reunions, and the mysterious power of love that fans of Christina Loren, Sarah Hoogle, and Emily Henry will adore. Here's the synopsis. 16 years ago, a teenage Will Sterling saw, or rather heard, the girl of his dreams. Standing beneath the apartment building balcony, he shared a perfect moment with a lovely, warm-voiced stranger. It's a memory that never faded. Though he so much put his past behind him, now unexpected inheritance has brought him back to the same address, where he plans to offload his property and go back to his regular work life of overworked doctor. Instead, he encounters a woman two balconies above, who's uncannily familiar. No matter how surprised Nora Clark is by her reaction to the handsome, curious Will, or the whisper pre-dawn conversations they share, she won't let his plans to ruin her quirky, close-knit community. Bound by her loyalty to her beloved grandmother, she sets out to foil his efforts and with a little bit of sabotage. But beneath the surface of their feud is an undeniable connection, a balcony of star-crossed couple, a fateful meeting. Maybe it's the kind of story that can work out in the end, or maybe it's the perfect second chance. So this book is all the feels. Like, I've been reading this book and I really loved it. It's the burned and there's like some sabotage. There's a great community of neighbors. So it's a perfect neighbor romance for you to pick up. And it has all the emotions that I come to expect from Kate's book. Make sure to add it to your TBR. This book is already out and you can buy it from any of your favorite booksellers. For more book recommendations, please visit kensingtonbooks.com. Now let's go to an interview with Cassandra Clare. Hi, Cassandra. Welcome to What You Next podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
It's a big question.
I'm an author of fantasy books for teenagers. And also I'm the co-writer of the Magisterium series with Holly Black, which is a middle grade series. And I've been a writer my whole life. I've always been writing. I got my first book published in 2007. So I've been doing this professionally for almost 15 years. And I live in a small town in Massachusetts with my husband and my cat Reginald, who is asleep on the other side of my screen.
Oh my gosh, I love this. So let's talk about your writing process. Like, what inspired you to write The Shadowhunter World? Like, you know,
I've written a lot of sort of stories and novels that were started but not finished because they didn't really have whatever it, you know, the hook in there for me to actually, you know, get all the way through the whole story. And I'd actually recently moved to New York City. I grew up in mostly in Los Angeles, and I was living in Los Angeles. I was an entertainment journalist and moved across the country to New York. And there I just became really in love with the city of New York. It's such a, for those of us from Los Angeles, where we drive everywhere, you know, it's, there's something about like how much contact you have with the city in New York and how tangible it is and how filled with people. So it's so diverse and it's so fascinating. And so I became really interested in this, the idea of setting a fantasy series in a sort of alternate New York where there were magical creatures and where the history of New York and the actual buildings and monuments and places in New York that people know had both a, you know, real life existence and also an existence as in sort of a fantasy level. So everything in New York existed in sort of more than one way and had a kind of a magical component. And that was the first sort of start to my thinking about The Shadowhunters. And then I knew I, knew I wanted to write about a band of people who fought demons.
I love this idea of, like, you know, like the setting, because the setting plays a role, and it plays, and you set it in different area or eras. Like, it's not even like, it's not contemporary New York or contemporary like London, you know, like it's like 1900s, you know. So it reads like, for someone who's like, who's fascinated with like historical romance, like I am like a historical romance fan, it's like it reads that world of fantasy. It's like the marriage of both. Like, it gives you a sense of, like, you know, the stuff that happens in the other gears, but then this whole magical world that just happens, you know, where there's demons and just shadow hunters who are killing them, and it's just like, it's just fun.
Yeah, I think that there's a real, you know, I'm also a historical romance fan. And I think, you know, when I came to Infernal Devices, which is the prequel to The Mortal Instruments, you know, I really just wanted to set it in the time period that I found, you know, really romantic, really fascinating, and kind of, yeah, I, you know, overlay the classic historical romance with kind of an action plot about demons. But I fully believe that you can have both, you know. I mean, one of the things I think is the most fun about writing is being able to mix up genres, and I also am a big historical romance fan.
I love this. Yay. So in terms of historical romance, let's talk about a little bit about that. Who are your go-to authors? Like,
I'll buy anything by Courtney Milan. I love Cherry Thompson. I probably, my favoritest book ever is, oh my God, how am I not remembering the name of this? This is like the, one of the most famous romance novels. It's got the Lord of Scoundrels.
Oh, Loretta Chase. Oh my gosh. Yes.
I love Loretta Chase. She's great. I like Julia Quinn. I haven't seen Bridgerton yet just because I'm like on a deadline, but I plan to. I really love Mary Balla. She's great. I'm trying to think. Man, I'm terrible with names. Name some of yours.
I would say Julia Quinn, Lyssa Kleypas is another one that I have.
Lyssa Kleypas. I love
Derek Craven.
The Devil in Winter.
Devil in Winter, Sebastian St. Vincent.
So good.
Yes, so good. Let's see. Eva Lee has been writing 80s movies remakes.
I have not read those, so that's
amazing. They're like fun. The Breakfast Club in Eden, you know.
So I love Laura Kinsale. I don't know if she's still writing, but she's written some of my favorites. I love The Shadow and the Stars, beautiful, like set in 19th century Hawaii, which is such an unusual setting for a romance novel. I really love that. And Tessa Dare, I like.
Yes, Tessa Dare is delightful. Like, it's just like a rom-com. I feel like for contemporary readers who are skeptical about historical romance, I'm like, just start with Tessa Dare. And then you're going to go down to this whole world of like, of novels that are just going to take you to different places. So I have to tell you, when I read Chain of Gold, and I was like, they were like going on picnics and doing the marriage mar in the ballroom. And I was like, it just feels like a historical romance, you know?
Oh, totally. Because I love that stuff. You know, I fell in love with Jane Austen when I was, you know, a teenager. And Jane Austen, to me, then moved on, like gave birth to reading Georgette Heyer. Georgette Heyer moved me on into reading just Regency romance, and then on into reading, you know, just all historical romance all up and down the grid. And I really feel like, you know, I hate that romance gets a bad rap. It's like so diverse and so interesting in its different, you know, treatments of different subjects. You can find books that are set in any time, in any place, about any topic, you know, and I've learned a lot reading, you know, historical romance, and they always do remind me of, you know, that core thing about Pride and Prejudice, which is just how high stakes are for women in historical romance. And that's one of the things I really love. And it's one of the things that I tried to kind of evoke with Chain of Gold is, you know, Cordelia comes to London feeling like she has to get married to save her family. And the idea that, like, you know, the action that a woman could take to change her life, to save her family, we're all about marriage, you know, and social stat, and, you know, you know, sort of working within the confines of what was societally acceptable. And I just find that really interesting.
I love that you also incorporate diversity within your characters, even though, like, it's like, you know, there's LGBTQ, there's, you know, different race, there's different. And so it doesn't, because I think sometimes the perception is like in historical times, it was all white. And it's like, no, there's a whole different gamut of experiences and different things that happen. And yes, there are things that may not be out in the open as there were, you know, now, but there, it existed, like it did happen, you know, so.
Absolutely. You know, London's a big, diverse city. It always has been. Mm-hmm. It's never been all white, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, LGBTQ people have been with us forever. Mm-hmm. And even if they were, you know, forced to be closeted, that didn't mean that they didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I do love about, you know, the certainly like Courtney Milan or Sherry Thompson's, you know, they've made a real effort, I think, to diversify historical fiction and historical romance and make it, you know, more common to have love interests and heroines who are of different ethnicities and religions, and often to have storylines that are LGBTQ. And I really, you know, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I love this. So let's talk about, so what are some of, why fantasy? Like, you know, like, what are some of the challenges writing fantasy? Is it role building? Is it character development? Is it just putting it all together? You know, because you take us to a different world, you know, and just suspend belief and just create just this magical, addictive page turning, you know, experience that, you know, you're just like, you can't stop reading them. So
I think that, I mean, it's kind of interesting because, you know, growing up, my mother was a huge fan of Jane Austen and historical romance. Mm-hmm. My father was a huge fan of fantasy and science fiction. Mm-hmm. So I got both. So I would be reading with, you know, my mom, I'd be reading Jane Eyre. And then the next day with my dad, I'd be reading Isaac Asimov. And, you know, it was, so in my mind, these things blended, mm-hmm. I think, you know. So in the same way, we're all sort of combinations of our parents. I'm a combination of their interests. And so when I went to write, you know, a story, I knew I wanted there to be magic in it. And to me, you know, that's just, it's an extra layer of wonder in the story. And I trying to remember, because it's so long ago, but I am working on, I'm actually working on a new book right now called Swordcatcher, which is set in a different world.
I was going to ask you about that.
Okay, well, we can talk about it later, but I'm just like, I'm really like reliving that experience of inventing a world.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with fantasy comes some things that are more freeing than writing, you know, strict, you know, realistic fiction, because there are things you can make up, you know, there are things that you, where you can, if you want your characters to get from London to Paris, they don't have to take a train. They can take a magical portal. So that stuff is fun. But there's also the whole, you know, building of a magical world that has its own rules, and that those rules have to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't break them. You have to live within the framework of the rules you've created, and you have to build a world that feels real to people. You know, they can't feel like, oh, this doesn't seem like something that could happen. They have to take, you know, you have to create suspension of disbelief in a real way that feels like, oh yes, this makes sense. So I think that's the hardest thing about it, is to create that, you know, that consistent magic system and that real feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, it's funny because I've never tried writing something that was realistic, so I don't know how that would be.
That's okay. I love your world. I love the world. Like, it just, it transports you. I think it's like, it's a perfect pandemic read for me, because I'm not ready to be in this world right now. We're going through all this unprecedented times, and I'm like, I just want to transport it to a world where there's like some rules and some magic, and it just takes me to different places and different problems, or I can actually beat them. Like, I can beat a demon, you know, like, as opposed to like thinking about today. Like, I don't want to deal with that, you know? So I think it's like, it's a perfect, you know, I think it's like, those are like perfect pandemic reads. Just to like, kind of like just dive into those worlds and just see where really,
there's a real escapism in books, which is great.
Yeah. So let's talk about Swordcatcher. So you're diving into adult fantasy. So what is the difference between adult and YA, you know?
So Swordcatcher is a high fantasy. So unlike like Shadowhunters, which is set in our world, but there's magic in our world, it's set in a completely invented world. Ooh. It's sort of a mishmash of different influences, but it's set in a port city that's very diverse because it's the center of sort of trade in its world. So there are people from all over, and it has a kind of mix of a Renaissance, golden age of travel, Silk Roads feel to it. And it's really fun. I will say that it's definitely been different to write adult. And when I first sat down to work on it, you know, I knew that obviously knew I was writing adult, but I didn't know exactly how it would feel differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, it's about what the characters are most focused on. Mm-hmm. That when you are writing teenagers, their concerns are the concerns of people in their teen years.
Mm-hmm.
Completely realistically, that's their age. And so they're going to be focused on questions like, who am I going to be? What kind of job will I have later? You know, what's my future? And, you know, what kind of relationship do I have with my parents? Am I worried about, you know, being like my parents? Do I want to be like my parents? You know, what's my relationship with romance? This is going to probably be my, you know, if we have a romance, it's probably my first romance, you know, And so with writing about adults, I've discovered, you know, just this very separate set of concerns. You know, they're much less concerned about, am I going to turn out like my parents? Because they're adults. They pretty much know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their relationships with their families and their parents are very different because they're coming at it from the point of view of being an adult.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming at romance from the point of view of people who've probably already been in love, and now they may be falling in love again, but, you know, certainly several of them have already been married or, you know, been in love, been through this experience. And in terms of also, you know, that they have a lot of focus on what they do for a living, their jobs. I know it seems weird in a fantasy context, but even if you are the king of a fantasy world, that's still your job.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have a lot of focus on your job and your responsibilities and the things you do. One of the characters is a doctor. One of the characters is a bodyguard. One of the characters is an assassin. One of the characters is a prince. Mm-hmm. And they're all quite focused on, you know, the things that they do for a living, whether it is being a prince or being an assassin.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited. I love this idea of like looking at it, you know, as someone who reads for pleasure, and also because it's part of the job, it's to look at, you know, adults, like the relationship of how different it is from an adult, like to YA, like things that I take for granted, you know, as an adult, like they know what their relationship to the world is. Well, in YA, it's like they're starting to figure out what the relationship is to the world is. And those relationships are, those romans are just happily for now. Like we're not expecting them to get married, you know? Like that's like, you know, like it was a little like, okay, we're expecting them just to like, they're gonna fall out of love like at some point, and they're gonna have those experiences as they grow up, and then they're just gonna realize like, you know, they grew up, like life is a little different.
And in terms of, I think, your relationship with your parents, it's just really, it's one of the things that changes the most, you know, from being like, you know, being that person who's coming to understand that your parents are just real people. They're not like magical, all-powerful beings the way they are when you're a child, that they're real people and they may be flawed. And by the time that you're an adult, you have been through that process. Like, you know who your parents are as people, and your relationship with them is different.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. So in terms of writing, like, do you follow an outline? Do you see where to start, the serial plotter, pantser? And then how do you keep yourself organized from all these different different things, you know?
I'm making faces at you while
I know. I know.
I'm like, oh God, organization. But it's definitely something that has been forced upon me by circumstance, because it's such a big world, the Shadowhunter world. And initially when I started out, you know, I kept notes, a file of notes. And then the file of notes began to be, you know, unwieldy. Like it was very hard to find anything. It was just, you know, it wasn't separated out by topic or anything like that. So I created what I think is what you often called in TV a story Bible. And so I've used that term, which is story, you know, Story Bible is has everything in it. It has all the characters, their backstories. They're, you know, often important dates. It has history, magic sections for weapons, sections for, you know, magic systems, sections for rules, sections for exceptions to rules, you know, sections for families, how they're related to each other, family trees, things like that. So eventually created this Bible and then with my assistant began to digitize it. So sort of still in the process, but we have these digitized, you know, this digitized sort of story Bible and also search, obviously searchable versions of all of the books. And so, yeah, it's a process. I remember yesterday I was talking about something happening in book and my assistant was like, well, as you know, Julian hates lettuce. And I was like, I don't remember that Julian hates lettuce. Does he hate lettuce? Oh, we go with the story Bible and look it up and it's in there. Julian hates lettuce.
Oh my God. I love this. Yeah, I feel like I feel the pain for when authors are writing, and I've interviewed quite a few authors who've written like long series, and you're like, sometimes you miss it. And then you have the fans who are like, bring it up. And you're like,
I know. And I'm like, oh,
you're a human being. Like, it happens, you know.
We're all flawed. And I'm a terrible speller. I'm just gonna say that. And so usually that's fine because I have, you know, copy editors and editors and the books go through many, many rounds of revisions. But I was on Twitter the other day and they were like, why you keep spelling this Alistair's name wrong? And I was like, do I? They're like, is that because he's gonna die? I was like, no, it's because I can't spell. Anything to do with whether he's gonna die or not.
Yeah. There's no foreshadowing there.
No, there's zero foreshadowing. I was like, I love this idea that like, I know this character's gonna die, so I'm like cruelly misspelling their name. But I was like, no, I'm just not good at spelling, and there's no, you know, social media goes very fast, and there's no fact checking, no one's looking at it. And I was like, oh, that's so embarrassing.
You know, it is fine.
They're all human.
We're all human. Like,
his name is not misspelled in the books.
No. So I saw in your bio that you like to write not at home.
That's working out really well for me right now.
And so how's that going?
Oh my God. I mean, that's a very good question. I know that we're all, you know, pretty much stuck at home. And yes, it's been really difficult. You know, it's true that I don't like to generally work at home, and I don't even have an office. I've never put an office really into my house. I have, we have a barn that we sort of remodeled, and it has all of my books, maps, research material. So I'll go in there and do research. But usually when I'm writing, I'm with my friends. So Holly Black lives near me. My friend Kelly Link lives near me. My assistant Emily lives near me. We have, you know, we have a group of friends in the area, and we usually get together to work. So it's been very, I would say, first, mostly, I think the thing that we all have to cope with is the loneliness of, you know, working at home. Mm-hmm. It's tough. You know, I'm sitting here now. This is where I work. I'm at my dining room table. And this is where I've been for the past year. Because I was on tour for Chain of Gold when the pandemic happened. And I had to kind of like rush home. And everything changed very quickly, which I think is true for, you know, everyone. And so I went from being on tour for a book, meeting all these people, to being alone in my house completely. And I could only talk to my friends on the phone. And that's still the case. We've adapted to some extent. You know, we check in every week. We just did a workshop 2 days ago. The one where I was talking to my assistant about lettuce, but it was all on Zoom. So there's a real adjustment to doing things that way and not doing them in person. I don't think that for us, or for me, certainly, you know, doing Zoom is going to replace doing things in person with my friends, but I have learned to some extent to adjust to it. I also am a really passionate traveler. I love travel, and I spend a lot of every year in other places, and I'll, you know, I like to go to places that are related to something I'm writing. When I was writing Dark Artifices, I spent a month in Cornwall, I spent a month in Mexico, you know, then, and so for me, not to be able to go to any of the places that I'm writing about is really tough. And, you know, I'm really excited at the, you know, for the world to open back up again. But I'm trying, done a lot of armchair traveling. I've read a lot of travel books, you know, kind of tried to read unusual things that I wouldn't read otherwise, watched a lot of travel TV.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Like I just discovered travel television and made my way through a whole bunch of it. I think that it's, you know, it's really, I think it's really an adjustment for all creative people. And part of it is worrying about, you know, the world, the state of the world, you know, the pandemic, worrying about people you care about, worrying about everyone. And then there's also, I think, you know, just the aspect of feeling very lonely and very weighted down by, you know, just sort of the pressure of what's happening and not having, you know, that sort of support group around you that you're used to. So yeah, I can only say, you know, that it's been tough and that I, like everyone else, I've tried different things to kind of adjust. Mm-hmm. And some of them have worked better than others. But, you know, I can't not admit, say that I'm very excited for, you know, my people I know have started being vaccinated and that's great. My parents are vaccinated now and, you know, they're moving on, you know, in Massachusetts with vaccinating people. And I'm just pretty excited for things to get back to normal.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Me too. I live in New York for 14 years and I moved to Chicago 2 weeks before the pandemic. So basically I had 2 weeks where I was like, oh, this is interesting. I'm just living in a new place. And then it was like, everything shut down. I was like, I guess this is like going to be interesting. So I'm like looking forward to getting to know the city and getting to know the stuff. And I work for my old company. So I work from home now. And that's been an interesting adjustment to like, I'm not seeing real life people and like, other than my Starbucks barista, you know, for a year, you know, so traveling, seeing friends, you know.
Absolutely. I was talking to my husband yesterday. We're watching all of Anthony Bourdain.
Woo!
We're like, oh, it's travel. And we were watching it and he was like, I think when I finally get out, you know, in the world again and walk around like in a city, I'm going to feel really nervous. It's been so long, you know, I have to like get readjusted. And I was like, I was like, I don't know. I feel like I'm just going to stage dive.
You're like, yeah.
Strangers.
I know. It's just like, it's a different world. Like, I don't know, like, what do you look like, you know? So.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for engaging with this.
Oh, no, not
at all. The pandemic. So let's see. Oh. What book would you recommend? We talked about historical romance, which I actually, if you like New York, you should read Joanna Shoup. She writes really great Gilded Age New York.
What's her name?
Joanna Shoup.
Okay.
Thanks. I'll shoot you an email with it, but yeah. She writes Gilded Age in 1895 New York, downtown, uptown, the 400s, Astor, you know, Newport. It's a fun travel of New York, you know.
That is really cool. Okay, I'm going to pull up my Kindle right now and I'm going to see what I'm reading. And that will help me recommend to you. I'm usually reading like 900 things at a time and I'm going to try to avoid research materials that will not be of interest to anybody but me. But let's see, what have we got here? Oh, I just downloaded Lisa Kleypas's I Will, a Christmas
novel. Ooh, I love this.
I'm reading a great book by Catherine Addison called The Angel of the Crows, which is kind of a retelling of Sherlock Holmes in a fantasy London where there are angels. The angels are these terrifying creatures. You know, they're both full of power, but they're also extremely dangerous because they're so powerful. And our hero, of course, Watson, meets Sherlock Holmes in this world. He's also an angel, so he's this very strange otherworldly being, but he loves solving crimes. So they've gone off together to solve a crime, and so far I love it. It's terrific. I've read The Priory of the Orange Tree by Samantha Shannon, which is a really great, really feminist high fantasy. So I would definitely recommend that to anyone who loves high fantasy.
Yes, I love that book so much. It's so good.
I love that it really took a really like putting women into prominence, you know, view. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, of fantasy. And that's really nice to see. I'm really excited to see like how many women are writing high fantasy now, because for a long time it really was something that men did and women didn't. Mm-hmm. And it's just great to now have this kind of fantasy where women are not, you know, ornamental, but are in fact really important in moving the plot and are not just there to be like, you know, with, you know, the wench came out of the pub, you know, her kirtle was very tight. Like, oh, come on.
I know. I have to say, someone who reads mainly female writers, like, I appreciate it. It's like, we're far and few between, so are we male writers? And like, I love the fact that our female writers are taking risks and trying different things that are like not normal. And you're like,
and really just forefronting women and women's experiences and how, you know, it is actually a different way of seeing the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. So tell us where we can find you online.
Where we can find me online?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm on Twitter at Cassie Claire. I'm on Instagram at Cassie Claire 1. Somebody already had Cassie Claire. Oh, well. I'm on Tumblr at CassandraClaire.tumblr.com. So that's pretty much where you can find me online. I have a newsletter that, if you're a big Shadowhunter fan, is great because it has a lot of like special content, like art and novellas and short stories that aren't otherwise, you know, posted or available. But if you're sort of casually interested, I would suggest checking out my Instagram or my Twitter.
I love this. Thank you, Cassandra, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. And, you know, always great to talk to you. And I'm so glad that we agree on so many historical romance writers. They really are awesome.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatyourextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATTORead10 to save. Visit whatyourextblog.com/queenbeereads. What Your Next Podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.